Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of Under Western Stars, coming to you from the old ranch house in Doney Park out north of Flagstaff, Arizona. I'm your host, Tony Norris, and today we will be saddling up and riding. We'll look at the cowboy's relationship to his horse. I'd like to do a poem by Bruce Kiskaden. Bruce Kiskaden, one of the finest of the old-time cowboy poets. It's called The Little Blue Roan. Now, a blue roan was a horse that had black hairs interspersed with white hairs, and it created a sort of blue, grizzled appearance. A little bit of background for this poem. It was the practice on the open range that any cowboy that was out on the range and came across an unbranded calf, he would rope it and brand it. Now, if the mother was nearby, he would put the brand of the mother on the calf, thereby establishing its lineage. If there was no mother around or nobody watching, he might put his own brand on and then get a start on his own ranch. Many a rancher got started that way. So this is telling how the little blue roan saved this cowboy from making a mistake. The little blue roan. Now, most all of you boys have rode horses like that. He wasn't too thin, but he never got fat. The old breed that had a mustache on the lip. He was high at the withers and low at the hip, his ears always up. He had wicked bright eyes. And don't you forget, he was plenty cow-wise. His ears and his fets and his pasterns was black, and a stripe of the same run the length of his back. Cold mornings he'd buck, and he always would kick. No horse for a kid or a man that was sick. But Lord, what a bundle of muscle and bone, a hoss for a cowboy, that little blue roan. For afternoon work or for handling a herd, he could turn anything but a lizard or bird. For roping outside, how that cuss could move out. He was to 'em before they knew what 'twas about. And running downhill didn't faze him at all. He was like a buck goat, and he never did fall. One day in the foothills, he give me a break. He saved me from making an awful mistake. I was riding along at a slow, easy pace, taking stock of the critters that used in that place, when I spied a big heifer without any brand. How the boys ever missed her, I don't understand. For none of the stock in that country was wild. It was like taking candy away from a child. She never knowed just what I had on my mind until I bedded her down on the end of my twine. I'd wrapped up her toes in an old hogging string, and I was building a fire to heat up my ring. I figured, you see, I was there all alone, till I happened to notice that little blue roan. That hoss, he was using his eyes and his ears, and I figured right now there was somebody near. He seemed to be watching a bunch of pinon, and I sure took a hint from that little blue roan. Instead of my brand, well, I run on another. I used the same brand that was on the calf's mother. I branded her right, pulled her up by the tail with a kick in the rump for to make the brute sail. I had branded her proper and marked both her ears when out of the pinon two cowmen appears. They both turned the critter and got a good look while I wrote the brand down in my own tally book. There was nothing to do, so they rode up and spoke, and we all three sat down for a sociable smoke. The one owned the critter I'd happened to brand. He thanked me, of course, and we grinned and shook hands, which he mightn't have done if he had only known the warning I got from that little blue roan. Here's a song by Jimmy Driftwood. Jimmy Driftwood is not a familiar name to many people, but the songs that he wrote are familiar. It was Jimmy Driftwood that gave us the Battle of New Orleans. He was an elementary school teacher in Snowball, Arkansas. When he decided that he could teach his children dates and facts and figures much better if he put them in a song. And so he wrote the Battle of New Orleans as a history lesson for his class. In about 1970, I was hitchhiking through Arkansas, and in Mountain View, Arkansas, I met Jimmy Driftwood. He invited me over to his home, and we played music all night long. He wrote a song about a horse that his ancestors had, a Tennessee Walker-type horse, and it's a great song. Let me try to sing it for you here. Along about 1825, I left Tennessee very much alive. I never would have made it through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been riding on the Tennessee stud. Had some trouble with my sweetheart's pa. One of her brothers was a bad outlaw. I sent her a note by my Uncle Bud, and I got away on the Tennessee stud. Oh, the Tennessee stud was long and lean, color of the sun, and his eyes was green. He had the nerve, he had the blood, and there never was a horse like a Tennessee stud. Was riding in the beautiful land, I run smack dab into an Indian band. They jerked their nags with a hoop and a yell. I got away like a bat out of well. I circled their camp just a time or two, show them what a Tennessee horse can do. Redskin boys couldn't get my blood. I was riding on the Tennessee stud. On down into no man's land, across the river called the Rio Grande. I raced my horse with the Spaniard's foal. I won me a skin full of silver and gold. Me and a gambler, we couldn't agree. We got in a fight over Tennessee. We jerked our guns and he fell with a thud. I got away on the Tennessee stud. Oh, the Tennessee stud was long and lean, color of the sun, and his eyes was green. He had the nerve, he had the blood, and there never was a horse like a Tennessee stud. I rode on back across Arkansas, I whooped her brother and I whooped her pa. I found the girl with the golden hair, she was riding on the Tennessee mare. Oh boy, stirrup to stirrup and side by side, we crossed the rivers and the valleys wide. Came to the big muddy and we forded the flood on the Tennessee mare, the Tennessee stud. Pretty little baby on the cabin floor, little hoss coat playing round the door. I loved that girl with the golden hair, the Tennessee stud loved the Tennessee mare. Cause the Tennessee stud was long and lean, color of the sun, and his eyes was green. He had the nerve, he had the blood, and there never was a horse like a Tennessee stud. No, there never was a horse like a Tennessee stud. Back in the late 1960s, I was living off the grid in West Virginia. I went to Lincoln County, West Virginia for a couple of reasons. One, because it was the poorest county in West Virginia, and land was very inexpensive there. Another reason was that there was still a thriving horse culture. People were farming with horses, plowing and cultivating, and I was fascinated with that. I wanted to learn about it. Now, I had several mentors there who showed me how to work with horses, how to harness them, how to hook them up to a Vulcan number 6 hillside plow and plow down one side of the hill and flip the moldboard over and plow back down the other side, because these were designed for hillside farms, not flat bottoms. They taught me how to use a double shovel plow to cultivate corn, a plow that had two small offset plows that would turn the soil up against the base of the plant and aerate the soil at the roots of the corn. There was a old man who had leased a pasture and put about a dozen horses in that pasture, and then he just sort of abandoned them. He didn't provide them with any feed, and they grazed out everything inside the pasture. The horses were starving, and at some point, someone opened the gate and let them out so that they would not starve. And this band of feral horses lived in the national forest all around the area where I was there. I was talking about the horses with Henry Baker, my neighbor, and he said, you know, if you catch one of those horses, you can put it up, and if the owner ever comes around, he has to pay you a feed bill for having kept the horse. And Pete Shu and I decided we were going to get ourselves a couple of horses. We had some draft ponies that we used for plowing and pulling a wagon and whatnot, and they were fine specimens descended from the mine ponies, about 15, 16 hands, 700 pounds. But they weren't very classy for riding horses. Pete and I saddled up our plow ponies and we went into the national forest and we tracked this herd of horses down, and we got them cornered up on a hillside pasture, and Pete roped a little black horse and I roped a beautiful red mare, about 2-3 years old. Took her back to my place on Little Laurel Creek and began to care for her, to feed her, and sure enough, a month or two later, the old man who owned the horse tracked me down and said, I want my horse. And I said, well, I have a feed bill on the horse for X amount of dollars. And I said, what do you want for the horse? And he quoted a price, and I paid him the difference between my feed bill and his asking price for the horse. And I had my horse. I called her Briar. She was the color of an Irish setter, like a burnished copper coin, beautiful, beautiful mare. Had a real nice little single foot gait that she would pace along at, and I was in my glory riding my horse through the Forest Service roads around the country there. I'd like to do a poem for you that Wendell Berry, the great Kentucky poet, wrote, and it was about his working with horses when he was a child, and then in later years returning to working with horses again. It's just entitled Horses. When I was a boy here, traveling the fields for pleasure, the farms were worked with teams. As late as then, a teamster was thought an accomplished man, his art an essential discipline. A boy learned it by delight, as he learned to use his body, following the example of men. The reins of a team were put into my hands when I thought the work was play. And in the corrective gaze of men now dead, I learned to flesh my will in power great enough to kill me should I let it turn. I learned the other tongue by which men spoke to beasts, all its terms and tones. And by the time I learned, new ways had changed the time. The tractors came. The horses stood in the fields, keepsakes, grew old and died, or were sold as dog meat. Our minds received the revolution of engines. Our will stretched toward the numb endurance of metal. And that old speech, by which we magnified our flesh and other flesh, fell dead in our mouths. The songs of the world died in our ears as we went within the uproar of the long syllable of the motors. Our intent entered the world as combustion. Like our travels, our work days burned upon the world, lifting its inwards up in fire. Veiled in that power, our minds gave up the endless cycle of growth and decay and took the unreturning way, the breathless distance of iron. But that work, empowered by burning the world's body, showed us finally the world's limits and our own. We had then the life of a candle, no longer the ever-returning song among the grass blades and the leaves. Did I never forget, or did I, after years, remember to hear that song again, though brokenly, in the distances of memory, is coming home. I came to a farm, some of it unreachable by machines, as some of the world will always be. And so I came to a team, a pair of mares, sorrels with white tails and manes, beautiful, to keep my sloping fields. Going behind them, the reins tight over their backs, as they stepped their long strides, revived again on my tongue the cries of dead men in the living fields. Now every move answers what is still. This work of love rhymes living and dead, a dance is what this plodding is, a song, whatever is said. Here's a song sung by Don Edwards, and it's about a cutting horse named Miss Alido. Now, cutting horses were the horses that were used when a cowboy was trying to cut out an individual calf or steer from the herd for purposes of branding or doctoring. And these horses were trained to fix on that one animal, and once they had identified the animal they were to cut, they were just staying with that animal, dodging this way and that, never letting it get back in the group. And it was a highly skilled horse that could do that. The cowboy would just hang his reins up and let the horse have its head, and the horse would work until it had separated the calf from the herd. And Miss Alido was a horse that was raised and trained near Aledo, Texas, where I was born and raised. And at the Fort Worth Fat Stock Show, she was sold at the highest price ever paid for a cutting horse at that time. I believe it was $2,000 Bob Crosby paid for Miss Aledo. And here's Don singing Miss Aledo.
Out in the West, it is often heard said, the only good paint horse is one that is dead. But to rules there's exceptions, I've got this to show. So take a deep seat, watch this paint filly go. Miss Aledo, Miss Aledo, swing to and fro, watching them doggies wherever they go. First to the right, then to the left, always in front of them doing her best. It was down at Fort Worth, at the big fat stock show, Bob first had the chance to watch this filly go. He walks right up to him, says, how much will you take? They said enough money for the rent and a stake. Now Bob says, I'll take her, but now let me see. Will you take a check, boys, upon the Crosby? The boys said, no, Bob, it's cash that we want. So he gets the $2,000 and he pays them right off. Miss Aledo, Miss Aledo, swing to and fro, watching them doggies wherever they go. First to the right, then to the left, always in front of them doing her best. Now watch her go to him, she does it so neat, you'd think that this filly had brains in her feet. She's always a-watching and seems to outguess anything she's working, she's doing her best. Now people will tell you it takes time to show a good cutting pony the right place to go. But this little paint filly just naturally knows more than most horses, she's just 2 years old. Miss Aledo, Miss Aledo, swing to and fro, watching them doggies wherever they go. First to the right and then to the left, always in front of them doing her best. If it's good cutting horses you're wanting to see, go out north of Roswell upon the Crosby. Miss Aledo and Powder, an old yeller cat, the best cutting horses the West has seen yet.
In 1988, while attending the Arizona Cowboy Poets Gathering in Prescott, Arizona, I met an old cowboy named Tom Blasingame. Tom was 90 years old. Tom told me that he was still breaking young horses at the age of 90, and the only concession he was making to his age was that he would break them down along the sandy borders of the creek where there were no rocks. So if he got thrown, he wouldn't break any bones. Tom spent about 78 years working for the J.A. Ranch in Paladuro Canyon, Texas. That's the old Goodnight Ranch. 73 years is how long he worked for the J.A. He was born in 1989, and a year after I met Tom, he was out on the pasture riding his horse, and he got down off his horse and lay down underneath a shade tree and crossed his arms over his chest, and he passed away. Ian Tyson has written a song about Tom Blasingame. I'll let Ian sing it for you here.
Thank you.
the name Tom Blassingame. 85 years in the saddle, seen 85 years through a cow horse's ears whilst chasing the wild bovines. Yeah, you thought they're all gone, there's still one hanging on, tied hard and fast to the memory, and might near the only one could tell us how she got done whilst chasing the wild bovines. There's 10 million cattle on 10,000 hills, and no man can ride for them all. Still Tom lopes along through the rocks and the rills, following the old cattle call. The cross S's, the five L's, the big double O's, to the matadors in Texas, and Lord only knows what a wonderful life in a wonderful game here on your Tom Blassingame. Tom, he claims that a man's true joy is in the work that a man likes to do. And if I understand, Tom's a right joyous man. And Tom, here's looking at you. The cross S's, the five L's, and the big double O's, to the matadors in Texas, and Lord only knows what a wonderful life in the wonderful game here on your Tom Blassingame.
Thank you for saddling up and riding with me on Under Western Stars. There are so many great horse songs, we might have to do another episode. Songs about Chapo and Stewball and the Zebra Dun. So we'll see, maybe we'll do another episode filled with songs and poems and stories about horses. Until then, I'm your host, Tony Norris. If I don't see you in the future, I will see you in the pasture.